So the exchange has happened. People are sitting where they want to be, I hope. And now is the time for this evening's talk, as we do every Friday evening. And usually I follow somebody's suggestion for the topic of the talk, and I make no exception today. This is following a suggestion which I heard earlier on today, and it came from me. So I'm now going to give a talk on what I want to talk on. So, it arises from a little simile which I gave during the 9-day meditation retreat. The reason I wasn't here the last two Fridays was I was down at Jhana Grove teaching people how to make their minds nice and peaceful. I gave the simile of the genie. You know that there's supposed to be these genies living in bottles, and if you rub them, the genie comes out and gives you three wishes. Have you ever tried rubbing the bottle? I have. I haven't found a genie yet. And it's good news as well. Because the simile is, if you did find a bottle and you rubbed it and a genie came out to you and asked you, I will grant you three wishes. What do you want? What would you ask for if it was serious and you only had a couple of minutes to answer? What would you want? And the title of this evening's talk is What Do You Want? Because I know for my life, I'll answer the question what I would say to that genie at the end of the talk. But I know for my whole life that it's very hard finding out what I really want. And for the very beginning of your life, it's one of the most spiritual of questions. You grow up in your life, and there comes a certain time in your life where you do have a little bit of time. You can pause. You can just take stock. Ask yourself what I'm doing. Especially in your youth, ask yourself, where do I want to be? What do I really want in my life? And for me, that certainly was when you were a younger student. There was a time when you had your first spiritual awakening of trying to find some meaning, some path in life. But what happened to you when you were young? You know, 16, 17, 18, 19. When you asked those questions, what do I really want in life? What did you want? And why? Too often, we don't really find a good answer to that question. So instead of really knowing what we really want in life, we tend to follow what other people are doing. That's our biggest problem in life. Because we don't know. We just look at what someone else is doing. Or what they want. That must be right. And so for many of you, you spent your whole life just following like sheep, thinking that, well, if other people have got a big house, I want one too. If other people have got a partner, I want one too. If other people go off on a holiday, I want one too. Not really knowing why you want these things, just because everyone else wants them. That's why. And too often that in religions, in spiritual life, part of my job is not just to comfort you and to tell you what a wonderful person you are, but sometimes to challenge you so you can actually really become much better and have more direction in life. So look at how you've lived your life so far. All this effort, this hard work, have you now got what you want? Or are you still looking for what you want and searching for it? I was talking with the monks in the car coming up here of a cartoon which I remember from many, many years ago. One of my favorite cartoons. Don't think that cartoons in newspapers are for children. The reason why they're funny is because they're very profound. They're pointing out that some of the stupidity in life. And this particular cartoon, it was only a single frame cartoon, was a picture of these, they called them terraced houses, rows and rows of terraced houses, which you see especially in the north of England. all grey, all uniform, as if they come off some production line, some conveyor belt, always looking the same. And all painted in a grey colour, which you see, you know, in those industrial towns of the north of England. But there was one of those terraced houses, had a bright yellow roof, and the owner had painted the walls in a green base with red polka dots. And in the space, the front door of that house was open in this cartoon, and halfway down the path to the road, you saw the owner being dragged away by two policemen into the waiting police car. It was saying that it's illegal to be different, that it's wrong to go on another path, that you cannot paint your roof yellow and put polka dots on the walls of your house. It was someone being different, not following the ways of everybody else. Now, I know in our society, we always celebrate those individuals, the ones who stand out, the ones who have the courage to do something different, the ones who have the guts to find out what they want rather than following what other people want. And I ask you that. Why do we celebrate those eccentrics? The ones who, in that famous quote, walk the path less travelled. Because what is doing, we recognise so much of what we want. It's not what we really want. It's what we think other people want of us. And so often in your life, you spend so much time trying to please others, thinking that that is the meaning of life, to try and make all the people around you happy. We do that when we first go to school, to make our teachers happy, to make our parents happy, and to make the peers, the friends which we have, happy. And sometimes that we don't have any happiness for ourselves. And later on in life, you think, to hell with all of those, I'm going to be happy. And you still haven't found any happiness at all. I remember another story, which this actually, I always keep this in mind, because being a monk, especially being a senior monk, being an abbot of a monastery, this is like my story to make sure that I do my job properly. And I read this story in another cartoon book, because I love cartoon books, but this was a Buddhist cartoon book written by this monk, Venerable Dhammika. He's got a great sense of humour and sometimes has some very profound stories. In this particular story, it was a story of a Buddhist nun. A Buddhist nun who was living in a cave, just happy, meditating, peaceful, just being content with the simplicity of her life. But one day when she came back from her morning alms round, because the monks and the nuns, we traditionally go out in the morning with our bowls to collect alms food from our disciples, and that's what we feed on. It's a very simple way of living. And when she came back from her alms round, she found that one of her robes, which she had left in her cave, had been chewed by a mouse. And so that she had to get out some spare cloth and a needle and thread and sew up her robe. I remember doing that many, many times in Thailand. Sometimes you had to be very careful. It's sometimes very poor. I remember one monk, he hung his robe on the line, he just went to the toilet and a cow chewed it. Now, this is the only robe we've got. We can't go to the robe shop and get a new one, so we just get some rags or whatever to sew it up. But after spending all this time sewing up her robe, she thought, why don't I get a cat? The cat, you know, maybe won't kill the mouse, but at least will chase it around, chase it out. The mouse will be able to smell. The cat will disappear. So the next time she was on alms round, she told one of the villagers there, her supporters, that I really need a cat, you know, to make sure there's no mice so I can keep my robe safe. And so they managed to find her a little cat and just left it with her. So she had a cat, so no more problem with the mice. But then the cat needed some milk. And she only got a little bit of food on alms round, so she had to ask one of her disciples, "Look, when I go on alms round in the morning, can you just give me a little bit of milk for the cats, not for me?" So the disciples, you know, they're very supportive, so they started giving her some milk. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to always be asking for things. So she thought, look, instead of asking for milk every day, why don't I ask them for a cow? Because then I can actually make my own milk, and I won't have to bother everybody. So she asked another of her disciples, you've got lots of cows, can you just spare me one so I can get some milk for my cat so the mouse won't eat my robes? So they were very kind. You know, you were very kind to the monks and nuns here, so they managed to give the little nun a cow, a very nice cow. But of course the cows have to eat as well. And so they were always asking the people in the town, can you bring some grass? And so they'd come every morning to bring grass for the cow. And then she thought, it's such a hassle getting grass for the cow every day. And then she asked, is there like a small little piece of your farm, a little field, or can I just let my cow graze in your field? And I said, okay, fine. You're very Buddhist, we're very generous. So they gave her a little field so she could graze her cow. But you know what cows are like. Sometimes they go in other people's field. So she realized that, you know, to be able to make sure that she didn't allow her cow to go and graze in other people's field, she needed a little boy to look after the cow. So, you know, there are such things as like temple boys. Those are people who have been to Sri Lanka and Thailand, the young people. You know, they can actually stay looking after the monks or the nuns or the cows in this case. And, you know, they can go to school as well. So that one of the supporters said, yeah, got a son. It'd be very good because they can associate with the nun and maybe learn some Buddhism and get very good character. So they sent this little boy to her. So she had a boy to look after the cow. But then, you know, just like for monks, monks can't have like women staying in their caves, so you know, she needed some place for the boy to stay. So she asked the villagers if they wouldn't mind sort of building a little hut just outside the cave, you know, for the boy. And then one day someone came up to her and said, I'd like to ask you a few questions on meditation. She said, no, I'm sorry, I can't make it right now because I've got to look after the builders who are building the hut for the boy who looks after the cow, who looks after the cat, who keeps the mice away from eating my robes. And then she realized where she had gone wrong. Just a simple thing, just like trying to keep the mouse from eating her robes, led to her having a cow, a cat, a cow, a field, a boy, and trying to find a place for the boy to stay. And she realized just how complicated things get. So what did she do? She sent the boy home. She sold the cow, gave it back. She sold the field. She even gave the cat away. And from then on, whenever her robes, the mouse returned. And she was very happy with her little mouse. And every time the robes were bitten and chewed, she would just put a little patch on it, because that gave her much more time than having to look after all these other things. Now, I try and remember that, because my life can get very complicated. Now, can you relate to that story? Sometimes we think, oh, if I get a bigger house, there'll be more space for me and my games and my friends and to visit. And you go and get the bigger house, and you have to get the bigger loan, and you have to get the more work. And your life gets like that too. You haven't got enough time. What do you really want? What that nun really wanted was just, you know, a bit of ease and comfort and more time to meditate. And she thought by getting the cat, she would have that more time, but she lost the plot. What do you really want in life? So very often, I ask myself as a monk, what do I really want? And I make that very clear. You know, in life also, you have arguments sometimes. And good people argue with each other, like a husband argues with a wife, and a wife argues with a husband. The Buddha actually said in many suttas, it's because not just wanting and craving, it's because of stupidity as well.
Why do you argue? What do you really want from your partner? And if you actually just find out what you really want, there'll be far less arguments in the world. There's a classic story which comes, you know, from conflict resolution. I hope I haven't said this story. Actually, I couldn't have said it last week because I wasn't here. The last talk I gave was about 3 weeks ago, so there's a good chance you haven't heard this story. If you had, you've probably forgotten it after 3 or 4 weeks. So, it was a story of the two sisters fighting over the orange. It's a very classic story for arguments and how they can be solved. So the two sisters had one orange, and they were arguing over who that orange would go to. One sister said, "You had the last orange, so this one's mine." And the other sister said, "But you had the last two oranges." "Yes, I did have the last one, but I should have this one too, because you had two in a row. Now it's my turn to have two in a row." And so they argued, and they could find no resolution. So what they did was to have compromise. They cut the orange in half. And the first lady took her half of the orange. She peeled it, threw the peel in the trash can, and ate her half of the orange. And the second sister took her half of the orange. She peeled it, threw the flesh in the trash can, because she wanted the peel to make a cake. If they'd only found out what they really wanted, number one, there would be no arguments. "Oh, you take the peel, I take the flesh. No problem." And they've got twice as much orange and twice as much peel for whatever they wanted to use it for. A lot of conflict becomes we don't listen to each other. What do we really want? So if ever you have an argument, don't say who's right and who's wrong. Because my teacher used to say whenever there's an argument, "Yeah, you're right, but you're also not correct. But you're correct, but not right." In other words, yeah, there's some part of you which is correct, but there's another part of you which is wrong because you're not seeing a bigger picture. You're not asking, what do we really want? If you find out what you really want, then many conflicts and arguments can vanish. When you have an argument, what do you really want? It's not really to be right. Half of the time you just want to be respected. You want your view to be heard. That's why I have learned that as long as everybody gets a fair hearing, especially like in committee meetings, which we have in our Buddhist society, if I feel that my view is heard and respected, I don't mind so much if I'm outvoted. I will go with the majority. But if I'm not heard and my view is not respected, that's a stupid view, get away, then I get upset. So remember, in a partnership, whether it's a committee, whether it's a company, a monastery, or a marriage, listen to each other, understand each other, so you realize, yes, your idea, your view is respected. If you get outvoted, fine, at least I've been heard and respected. Because that's one of the things we really want. We want respect, we want to be valued. Because sometimes we get so diminished in life. When someone gets angry at you, they curse you, they mistreat you. It's as if, you know, we're not valued. So I think what we really want in life is to be valued, to be respected, to be loved. This next story, again, is a classic story, but whenever I give a talk on any subject, and this particular case, of what do you really want, this story actually fits in neatly. And many of you have heard this story before, but it's a beautiful one. I told it a couple of nights ago in Singapore, and it went down very well. It's a story of a monk in a temple similar to this, but somewhere else in the world. And late in the night, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, he was awoken by a sound in the shrine room. As soon as he opened his eyes, he thought, "Oh, that must be one of the monks getting up early to meditate." But then he considered, with great wisdom born of experience, no, none of my monks get up early. So he got up himself and had a check to see what was making the sound. And he found a burglar. A burglar with a big knife trying to open the donation box. And as soon as the burglar saw the monk, he shouted at the monk, "Get away! Who do you think you are?" I love it when I can actually imitate a burglar, at least try to. It makes it much more fun giving a talk when I can act as someone I'm not. And the monk, it's very easy to imitate a monk, and the monk said, "You want some money?" "Yes!" said the burglar. And the monk reached in his pocket. "Don't pull out anything, no tricks," said the burglar. But all the monk did was pull out the keys to the donation box. "Here you are," said the monk. "Help yourself."
"What do you mean?"
And the monk explained that these are donations, acts of charity, to try and somehow help the world, maybe by building the temple, but certainly it should be used for helping poor people like that poor thief. "You do kindness to me and charity. You feed me every day. You give me my robes. Can't I do charity to you?" And that's how the monk talked. And so the burglar took those keys and opened the box.
But he still had the knife pointed at the monk, just in case.
And as the burglar opened the donation box and stuffed all the money in his pockets, the monk looked at him and said, "When was the last time you'd eaten?"
"None of your business."
Just above the donation box, in the cupboards, there is some food left over from today's meal. "Help yourself."
"Is this a trick?"
"No," said the monk. "Help yourself." So the thief opened the cupboards and filled the rest of his pockets with the food which was left over. And just as the thief was about to go, he shouted at the monk,
"And don't call the police! Or else!"
I do enjoy saying such things. It's against my rules to get angry. Anyway, the monk said, "Why should I call the police? I've given you that money. I've given you that food. You haven't stolen anything. So go in peace. Have a great day." And off the burglar went. And in the morning, that monk told the treasurer and the rest of the committee what he had done. And I hope if I did that here, the committee of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia would think, what a wonderful thing that is. That at least someone is actually practicing Buddhism. They are actually being kind and compassionate to others. Isn't that what we teach? So can't we practice it? Yeah, they lost a bit of money, but isn't it more important actually to spread the teachings of compassion and generosity? And that's what the monk did. So anyway, a few days later, the monk was looking at the morning newspaper and he saw that burglar. He recognized him in the paper. He'd been caught robbing another person's house. And a few days later, he saw that he had been sentenced to 10 years in jail for burglary, multiple burglary. So anyway, the days went past, the months and years went past. Just over 10 years later, the monk, much older now, he was woken in the middle of the night about 2 a.m. He went into the shrine room to investigate the noise. And who was there? The old burglar. With a knife next to the donation box again. And the burglar said to the old monk,
"Do you remember me?"
And now the old monk said, "Yes, I know who you are. Here are the keys, open it yourself, and you know where the food is." And at that point, the burglar put the knife down. And he smiled at that monk and said, "I haven't come to take any money or to take the food." The burglar said, "For the last 10 years, I've been thinking about you every day inside my cell. You are the only one I've ever known who was kind to me, who actually cared about me, and was even willing to give me food even when I was robbing your temple. I've been thinking that last time I came here 10 years ago, I stole the wrong thing. I have come here to steal again, but not money or food. This time I've come to steal your secret of kindness and generosity. Please teach me that. Make me a monk." Isn't that a nice story? It took him 10 years to realize what he really wanted. He wanted the secret how you can respect even people who are going to steal from you. He wanted the secret of how to be kind even to your enemies. And the secret how to be generous, how to respect others. That is where he found what he really wanted. Sometimes we think it's the money can get us those things. Sometimes we think it's the fame, sometimes the physical comfort, sometimes the excitement and the pleasures of life. But is that what you really want? I was fortunate because, again, I went to this great university. So you saw people who were the so-called winners in life, the beautiful people, the people who had won the Nobel Prize. The people who, and that was one of the masters in our college, you had dinner with him. He was a Nobel Prize winner in chemistry, at the top of his field. There was another fellow in my same year. He was an international cricketer, Majid Khan. He played for Pakistan. Even at that time, he wasn't just an ordinary cricketer. He, you know, made it into international teams. Sometimes had the rest of the world versus England. He was right in there. And I remember going to see him at a, you know, every now and again he played for the college. A brilliant cricketer, brilliant batsman. And even though I was not sort of expert in the game, sometimes when you see someone who is so advanced in their skills, it was actually beautiful to watch. And you him too. But there they were, top of their field, and you got to know them personally. And they weren't that happy. There was something missing in their lives. I would love to be there, to be an international cricketer, to get a Nobel Prize. There's one fellow who was a lord, filthy rich. But I didn't want to be like that. There was missing something. So I was fortunate that what most people would aim for and aspire for, especially as a young person, to be a great cricketer, to be rich, to be famous. I saw that and it didn't make any sense to me. That's not what I wanted. It was great to knock those out of the way, first of all, early on in my life. And that's one of the reasons why I got interested in Buddhism. It was a path less traveled, especially, you know, for a young Westerner. It was something that sort of promised what I really wanted. I still remember the time I saw my first monk. I know it so well. It was in the Wordsworth room of King's College, Cambridge. I can picture it right now. That's how much, that was how long ago, I was 18. That's almost 42 years ago now. And I can picture that right now. That's how much of an effect it had on me. Why? Because that monk, he had something. I didn't know what it was, but I recognized that is what I wanted. A lot of you come here. You see the monks and nuns here. And the reason you come here is say, that's what I want. There's One of our past presidents, he's not here this evening, he was here about 2 or 3 weeks ago. That's Rachel Green. She won't mind me telling her name because she wrote a little book about her spiritual story. And the part which I like, well, I've got to be honest, it was about me. But it's actually really about how she became a Buddhist. She was suffering from panic disorders, anxiety attacks. And like many of you know, that if you actually come do some meditation, it really helps overcome anxiety disorders and panic attacks. Meditation is a beautiful method of overcoming that. And many people know that. Many people actually are sent by their GPs to places like this to learn meditation so they can overcome their anxiety disorders and panic attacks, and it works very well. But anyway, she came along just to learn some meditation to overcome her anxiety disorders. And then she saw, you know, these monks, and this is at the Armadale group, always seemed to be peaceful and happy. And she wrote in her book that when she first saw these guys, she thought they're just acting. You know, just a face you put on in public. And behind the scenes, you know, you're just like anybody else. You know, grumpy, arrogant, selfish. So actually she decided to try and visit our monasteries and check us out to see whether this was real or whether we're just faking it. And of course, you know, I really try hard to make everybody open. So, you know, you can come and see us many times. See us, you know, when we're off guard, not in public. And hopefully, I think you probably see that as you see us now is actually as we are at all times. And when she saw that, she realized, I don't know what those monks are on, but whatever they're on, I want some of it. She recognized that that is what she really wanted in her life. And what is that? It is that peace. It is that kindness. It is that joy. That is what we really want. Once you know what you want in life, it just changes your priorities. Now, why do people have to work so hard? Because this was a question which was asked of me in Singapore just a couple of days ago. A very common question, especially in a place like Singapore. There was a young woman doing well in her life, saying, the expectations of me are so high. They really want me to work hard. They want me to succeed. It's not just my family. It's my fellows in the office. It's even my country. They want me to put in the extra to compete in the world economy, to do better, to do more, to be more successful. And that's killing me. So how can I make this sort of balance between fulfilling my responsibilities, but also having this inner peace and happiness which you monks are always telling us is so important in life? And I think that many of you may be able to relate to that, this dilemma of modern life. You know you're working too hard, and you wonder for what reason, for why. And is that really what you want in life? As I often say, do you really want to be the richest person in the cemetery? Because that's usually what happens. Do you really want just to be the person in the big mansion? And I told the story, and I will never forget this. It's in Shelley. There was a big mansion on the river many years ago. I went there because it was at that particular time, it was a Thai woman owned it. She wanted it blessed. Just tradition. I went there to bless her mansion. And the story was, as soon as I arrived from Serpentine, an hour's drive, the first thing I wanted to do was to go to the toilet. And I will never forget this. I should have kept the piece of paper. She had to draw me a map of how to get to her toilet. That's how big the house was. Now, in your house, it's just, you know, down there on the left. No, in her house, straight down that corridor, turn left, right at this, back there, up the stairs, and wherever it was, I forget which, but it was something like that. But then, at the very end of the ceremony, what really sort of hurt me was when I asked, how many people live here? And she said, just me. I don't know how many bedrooms were in that house, 12 or 15 or whatever. And she lived there alone. And I asked her, how come no one lives with you? What about your relations? And she said, I'm terrified of my relations. Why? I'm scared they will come and ask for some money. The same with my friends. They see only my wealth. They don't see me. So they just come and ask for things. That's why I'm terrified of them. She was a prisoner of her wealth, afraid, with no friends. And I thought, is that what you really want? So please never envy those with great wealth. It's a curse. And yourself, look what you have. Look what you have. Isn't that good enough? Because when I left, Cambridge with the wealth, the privilege, and meeting and being with these already famous people, even though they're only 20, 21, and went to Northeast Thailand. It was going to these incredibly poor places. The trouble was, in these poor villages, 40 years ago, or 37 years ago to be precise, which had no electricity, dirt roads, no TVs, no radios, poor health, working like, really hard work. I'd never seen people so happy. And that was a huge shock to me. Because I thought that I should go to those places and maybe I should work and give donations to them. I should develop the village, bring in electricity, bring proper health care, build a nice school, build a hospital, do something for the village. But I realized actually the village was doing a lot more for me. I've never seen such happy people. I still, again, one of those memories from your early years which imprint themselves in your mind. I remember one evening, the first few weeks I was in this part of Thailand, going into the village in the evening. Someone was getting married or something. We had to do some chanting. And as we were walking through this village, the houses were built on stilts. Underneath was where they kept the water buffalo. And upstairs was an open veranda. And house after house after house, I saw the same scene. There was one little lamp. It was an oil lamp. And they used an old toothpaste tube, which they cut off in half. And they stuck a rag through the hole in the toothpaste tube. And that was the wick. That's where they lit sort of the wick. And the rag was just dipped in cheap kerosene. They could even afford no proper lanterns, but that worked fine. And by the light of that one little oil lamp, you saw the whole family sitting around in a semicircle. And maybe the old grandma was telling ghost stories. Or the old grandpa was telling fibs about when he went to Bangkok. lies, tall stories, jokes. And the little children were there. The whole family from just 2 or 3 years of age to the old ancient grandma, talking to each other as they were doing every evening of their lives. And when I saw that, house after house, I realized how much I'd missed out. Sure, I had a beautiful family, as families go. We wasted so much time watching the TV or just arguing with each other instead of sitting around in this beautiful, warm, oil light, just talking to one another, laughing, telling stories. Even though I'm sure those stories were old stories, but every time they're told, just like mine, we always change them. They always grow and exaggerate with every telling, as stories should. And I realized what we really want in life is that beautiful love, kindness, togetherness of a family. Just be able to spend time just talking with each other, telling stories. It doesn't matter if they're true or false, as long as they're good fun. In a story, they always say, never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
As long as you mention it's a story and so people don't get deceived, that's fine. But what that really meant, that's what people really wanted. So in our life, what do you really want? Isn't that image, like of a family, laughing, joking, being at peace, spending time with each other, something so attractive, especially when we don't see that in our modern world? Not that much anyway. Isn't that telling us that this is what we really want in life? You know, to be respected, to be loved, to be listened to, and just to spend time with one another. And how much of that have we lost? But we can regain it. As long as we realize what we really want is not the expensive car, the expensive clothes. We don't really want respect just because of how much money we have. If you go that path, you'll end up like that lady in Shelley. You know, she's left that house a long time ago in a prison of her own wealth. We don't want that. That's not what's really important to us. We want that friendship, that kindness, that love, that respect, that acceptance. That's what we really want. And that's actually how I teach people when they're meditating as well. Because for a lot of time when I was meditating, I used to ask myself, what do I really want? I want deep meditation. I want enlightenment. And you know that will frustrate you for year after year after year. Please don't go down that path. So those of you who try to meditate and you get stuck, ask yourself, what do I really want? What you really want is just some peace, some respect, some kindness, some love to yourself. So when I teach meditation, I say, well, if I really want that, just try to get enlightened, try to get deep meditation, try to get psychic powers. That's not going to get me anywhere. So instead, I make peace. I'm kind. I'm gentle. I give my mind respect. Sometimes my mind's all over the place. Sometimes my mind's tired. I work so hard sometimes. I travel so much. And sometimes it's nature to be tired. So I realize I don't want anything. I just want this beautiful sense of kindness, compassion and peace towards myself. I want to be at peace with myself. Isn't that what you really want? So when you ask yourself what you really want, a lot of the problems and troubles in life are just taken away almost at one stroke. Even when you get sick or you get old, what do you really want when you get sick or you really get old? Isn't it the case that many people, when they're sick, they just want to be treated like a human being, not like a sickness? So often I tell people, if you go and visit a loved one in hospital, please don't even mention the words, how are you? Those are the most stupid words anybody could say. What do you mean, how are you? They're in hospital, they're sick. You never mention the words, how are you? If I am in hospital, I would get that asked from the doctors and nurses all the time. What they really want to hear is like friendship and care. How are you going? Anything I can do for you? I heard the latest news. I hear Osama bin Laden has been murdered. Have you heard that? Oh yeah, what do you think about that? So you just want to talk to a person if they're in hospital, as you were talking to them if they were well in a coffee shop or at home. Because what they really want is friendship. They want to be treated as a person. So please, if you go to visit anyone in hospital, don't talk to the sickness. Please talk to the person. It's a really nice piece of advice, because that's how I would like to be talked to. I don't know if you've ever been in hospital, but sometimes you know people are coming. So you've got to rehearse a diagnosis. Well, the doctor said I might be out in 3 or 4 days and I'm quite sick and then I have to do that. The next person comes in and the doctor says I would have to be out in 3 or 4 days, and it just gets repetitive. You know, what are you going to tell the next person? Again and again and again, the same old thing. It drives you crazy. It really makes you sick. So please don't do that. And isn't it wonderful just to go to a hospital, if you're in the bed there, and someone actually treats you like a human being, not like a sickness? Because that's what we really want. And if you're sick, yeah, it's nice to get better. But what we really want is to be respected and cared for and loved as a human being, not as a sickness. And even when we're dying, it's the same thing. We just want to be cared for and loved. Yeah, if the sickness goes away, that's wonderful. But we know we're going to die one day, so we all just want to die well. What we really want in life is that peace of mind, that kindness, that compassion. So if you understand what you really want in life, as I said to that lady who asked, how can I find that balance in life? You can have everything you really want once you find out what it is that you really want. And for many people in their life, they will die before they find out what they really want in life. So for you this evening, ask yourself, what do I really want? If that genie did come up to you just after this talk and say to you, really, I'll give you 3 wishes. What do you want? Would you be able to answer that genie? Would you? That almost happened to me many years ago. Again, this is another old story, but it fits in. You know that as monks, we have to live very simply. One of our basic rules is you're not allowed to give me any money. We don't have any money. But there is a loophole. I'm going to tell you the loophole. I think many of you know it. In Pali, it was actually in the Vinaya, it's called the Mendaka Allowance. And what that was is, you don't give me any money, but you can come up to me and say, Ajahn Brahm, you know, you've really helped me, you've served me. Is there anything you want? And you usually have to say the amount. Anything you want. And I want to donate $50 or $100 for your use. Not for the temple, not for the monastery, not for the Buddhist society, for you. What do you want personally? Because I really want to help you. I'll give donations to the Buddhist society, but this is for you, okay? You really helped me. Please don't do that to me. Because that happened to me many years ago, maybe over 30 years ago. In Thailand, I'd helped a man with some problem, and he was very grateful. He knew the rules because he was a Thai, been around the forest tradition a long time. So he came up to me and asked me, he said, is there anything I can get for you? Just for you, not for the temple. 100 baht. 37 years ago. Now, these days it's only worth about $2 or $3, but that to me was a lot of money. So you know my mind went blank, as it often does. And maybe I meditate too much, I don't know. But anyway, I couldn't think. And he was getting very impatient. You know, he had his work to go to. And I came up with an idea. I said to him, why don't you come tomorrow morning? Tonight I'll think about what I want. And I'll write it down and give it to you tomorrow. He said, good idea, I'll be here about the same time tomorrow. So that night, after the evening meeting, chanting and meditation, I went back to my room, I lit a candle, because there was no electricity, and I got out an old piece of paper and a pencil, and I started thinking, what do I want? And straight away the pencil broke, so I thought, actually I need, not pencils, they're hopeless, I need like a pen, just a simple bio pen or something. And as for the piece of paper, it's just a scrap piece of paper, I need a little exercise book. No, nothing fancy, just a little exercise book. And also, you know, the candle was very, very difficult to write. It's bad for your eyes, just reading or writing by candlelight. What I wanted is one of these little oil lamps, little lamps you see maybe on the boats over here in Australia, just a little oil lamp and a bit of kerosene. And actually when you're talking about lights, my flashlight was really terrible. And I needed a new flashlight and some batteries. And when I put all those things down, I suddenly realized 100 baht was not enough. And, it was so difficult to actually to take any of those things off the list now. Because now I thought about them, I don't know how I'd survive without them. I mean, how can you survive? And actually, I needed some new sandals. If I'm going to be walking through those forests, I needed some new sandals. And actually, talking about pieces of paper, I really needed to write to my family. I needed these aerograms. And so 1,000 baht was not enough. And every one of those items I put on the list now was so important to me, I just could not scratch anyone off.
And that's when I had the insight. I realized what this thing was doing to me. At that point, I screwed up that piece of paper and I threw it in the waste bin, the little spittoon we had. And the following day, when that man came, I scolded him, "Don't you ever do that to me ever again." I was such a happy monk before you gave me $100 or 100 baht. Now I had all these desires. Now that's one of the reasons why monks don't have any money. If you gave us $100 or $200, it would never be enough. If you gave me 2 million, it wouldn't be enough. It was in the nuns' monastery, it's going to cost much more than 2 million. I think, I need another million from somewhere. How am I going to get it? You can see what's happening there. If you want things, there's no end. There's no end to the wanting of material things. That's why you have to work so hard until you die. Even your retirement fund, which you work so hard to put aside. Is it enough yet? Of course it's not. That's why people work 65 and 70, they're still working. They lie about their age or they do something business on the side. When is it ever going to be enough? That's why I just say, all I want is peace, happiness. I live in a cave. I'm not a hypocrite. I just eat what you give me. I don't have fancy robes. You don't need that much to be happy. What you need is contentment. What I really want is peace of mind. Contentment. Kindness. What I really get off on is actually flying all the way from Singapore back to here just to give this talk tonight and then flying back tomorrow. That's what I really want. I want to serve. I want to have peace. And that's how I get my peace. I did figure it out when I was very young. Well, I figured out that what I wanted to do in my life was to fulfill two objectives. I wanted peace of mind, inner happiness. But I also wanted, because just myself was not good enough, I wanted to be of service to others, to make a contribution, to make other people happy. That is what I want. I think I've done pretty well in the years of achieving what I want. What I really wanted was inner peace and the ability to share that with others. What do you really want? If a genie came up to you right now and said, "I give you 3 wishes," would you be able to say, "No, thank you. I'm happy with what I have"? If you can do that, then you understand what Buddhism is. And you are a real Buddhist. Someone who realizes contentment is the highest happiness. Being at peace with what you have. I'm not perfect. None of you are perfect. But you're good enough. And that is my idea of perfection. You can always get more. You can always use more. But what you've got is good enough. That's what's called being rich. You may not be the wisest person, but you're not the stupid person. That's what's called being smart. So when you understand what you really want, a lot of you have more of it than you really realize. You have enough. So can you be content? Can you tell that genie, "No, thank you. Go and see someone else. I have all I ever need"? That's what you really want. To be able to say that. To have enough understanding, peace and love. That any genie who comes, you say, "Go and see someone else. I'm fine." That's what you want. And thank you for listening.